morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Information Week Live for the week of December 13th, 2015. I'm your host, Kurt Franklin, and we're glad that you could be here for our last episode of Information Week Live for 2015. Next two Fridays will, of course, fall on holidays when all of us here at Information Week are going to be off doing other things, and we hope that whatever you're doing is going to be an enjoyable time. So today, we look back. We're going to be taking a look at the biggest stories of 2015. And I think it's going to be fun because we did have some big stories. We had stories with IT that involved mergers. We had stories that involved breakups. Politics were hit by IT stories, and of course, commerce was as well. So there's a lot to talk about. I want to remind everyone before we do that if you are live with us today, first of all, we really appreciate it, and second, we'd love to have your voice in the online discussion that takes place around each and every episode of Information Week Live. And if you're listening to us via either streaming on demand or podcast, well, we're glad to have you with us as well. Feel free to send in your comments later on via email. We'll talk about that. But to talk here on the air, I've got joining me one of my favorite guests to have on the air, and especially appropriate person to have here in this final show for the year. Charlie Babcock is editor-at-large for Information Week. And, you know, if you're not in the publishing industry, editor-at-large means, you know more about your beat than any of us do. So just go out and find cool stuff to write about. And Charlie does that on a regular basis. Charlie, we are so pleased to have you with us this afternoon. Thanks for taking the time to join us.
Well, Kurt, I love to hear your sonorous voice say all that. I don't know that it's true, but I sure like to hear it.
Nothing but the truth here on Information Week Live. Well, let's jump in, and not for a list, but tell me about a story that caught your eye this year. What was a story that grabbed you and made you think, you know, this is something important?
Well, Kurt, there's so many candidates. You know, I'd turn around and ask you, what was the biggest acquisition, the biggest kind of change in company alignment of the year? What springs to my mind is Dell's acquisition or planned acquisition of EMC for $67 billion. There have been some big acquisitions, but that's a pretty big one in 2015. And as I think about that, it seems to me that that's merely a symptom of something even more important than the acquisition itself. It's the scramble by everybody that we cover and the people that we talk to in the enterprises to realign around the new computing practices that are rapidly moving into place. And of course, as the cloud reporter, I tend to describe that as a distinct movement to the cloud in 2015 that will accelerate next year. And as a specific in that picture, I was very impressed in 2015 by the emergence of Amazon, not as a big cloud provider, but as a profitable one. No one knew they could do everything they were doing and still be making a handsome profit at it. Driving down prices periodically, making it difficult for other providers to enter the market, and still be making good money at it. Cloud revenue, Amazon Web Services in the first quarter, $1.56 billion in revenue, $265 million in income. Those are impressive figures, and it's accelerating for Amazon at a faster rate than others. That's what I came up with.
Well, you know, I think all of the things that you came up with there are really good. And first of all, let me say that I agree on the acquisition side. It's hard to beat this gigantic purchase of EMC by Dell. It is amazing. And I think the repercussions are still going to be, you know, spinning out for a while. Late this week has come at least the rumor that Dell is going to be selling Perosa systems in order to both generate some cash and to assuage the concerns of regulators. And for me, that's really interesting, that rumor, because I would have sworn after the acquisition of EMC that Dell was trying very hard to become the IBM of 1988, the company that was your one-stop shop if you are an enterprise CIO. If Perot Systems is in fact leaving the fold, then that takes a big piece of the Dell services business with it. Now, it's worth saying that Perot Systems is not the entirety of Dell's professional services. They have a number of other professional services organizations within the company, but they're, you know, it's a huge piece of the business. Would it surprise you if Dell was willing to sacrifice Perot to build essentially on its hardware and infrastructure business?
Yes, it would, in the sense that Dell had great hopes for Perot being the consulting arm that built up Dell into a much bigger presence in the marketplace than it had been. In that sense, yes. In another sense, no. And that Perot is something they can sell off that may reflect more of the legacy systems integration business than the business that they ought to be in. And I think they're looking toward their software division to kind of replace the role of Perot, building up things in software that consultants used to do and then putting the software on the market. I think Dell is belated. You know, years ago, I would have advised Dell, if you possibly can, become a software company, showing the expertise that you're using in-house. They belatedly have tried to do that, and I think they are still trying to do that. I think they're getting somewhere. The addition of EMC and all those guys, VMware, Pivotal, that brings real software know-how and assets into Dell. And possibly the bid here is to let software expertise replace the human expertise that Perot represented, and hopefully it'll be modern cloud-oriented software, and Dell will find a future in that.
Well, I think that's going to be a big question mark. So it's absolutely, now for me, this is great news because it means that we're going to be able to continue writing about Dell for some time into the future, which is always a good and happy thing. But to me, what, you know, among the interesting things here is that we also have the breakup of a company, with HP really going in the opposite direction. You know, they're really going after the focus on core expertise as part of what they want to do. Ideally having a good, solid enterprise business and a good, solid consumer business. That is recently completed. That split up happened only about a month ago. Do you feel like you see signs of success there? What do you think of the HP plan to divide and conquer?
Well, I wish them success. HP just has this fond place in a lot of people's hearts as a good technology company, an honest technology company, a trusted technology company. HP embraced the PC more readily than some other companies that wish to own the franchise or have nothing to do with it. HP was embraced Windows, embraced Linux without fear or favor, and offered not what it thought the customer should have, but what was at play, what were the things already proven in the marketplace. I think HP has always brought good expertise to those things and then made them available as a kind of not Switzerland exactly, but at least a trusted partner in building up the data center technology. So you wish HP Enterprise and the HP server PC division, you wish them both luck in their endeavors, and hopefully they can do better on their own than they were doing together. But geez, if there's a kind of a old guy in the Silicon Valley, it's beginning to look like HP, and you want some kind of fountain of youth to come along and quicken the stride and put a little more spring in the step.
Well, as someone who in many circles can qualify as an old guy himself, I'm not sure that I'm encouraged by that last piece that you were talking about there. Would love to say that I think Silicon Valley needs much more wisdom than springy steps, but I suspect that there are lots and lots of venture capitalists who think that you are exactly right in the prescription there. Speaking of acquisitions and young companies, and especially from your vantage point of looking at the cloud, I'm curious whether you think that IBM's acquisition of many of the assets of the Weather Company is meaningful. Now, if you're listening and you don't know, the Weather Company is the parent of the Weather Channel. The Weather Channel and weather.com are only two pieces of a much larger company. And what IBM did was basically buy all of the back end, all of the data generation, acquisition and analysis portions of the company, leaving the media portion to run separately. So what do you make of that, Charlie? Is this an important thing? Does it make any sense? Or is this just sort of someone's idea of a great joke to be played on the respective industries?
You're drawing attention to a good point. This was a uncharacteristic acquisition by IBM. IBM has shied away from becoming an application company. It's always concentrated on the systems, the underlying systems. It's tried to build the base technology that other people built on top of. The Weather Company is on top of everything. It's a specific type of data. It's a data collection process. It's a data application, set of applications that you just don't see IBM producing on its own or acquiring on a large scale. Other types of companies in this vein. But I do associate it with their big data efforts. Now, there's a superficial what do you call it, sympathy or synergy between all the weather data generated and some of the things that IBM systems can do with it. But chances are the doing with it is better left to people who are customers of the weather company itself, specialist in that area. I don't really see how IBM is going to bring out a killer weather application. But they can create all kinds of weather services that will bring people to their Blue Mix and SoftLayer cloud to develop applications. Think of it like Google Maps. People go to Google, they sure plug those Google Maps into their applications whenever they can. I think IBM is looking at this as a draw, as a general purpose draw, that they will somehow generate as a service readily available to many developers, and you'll find those developers soon in the Blue Mix platform application as a service, developing important applications. And the other thing I associate it with is Watson, the analytical engine, and IBM is selling general purpose analytics through Watson, but it's beginning to make Watson into more and more specific personalities. It's going to do a vertical healthcare Watson, which could be a very powerful thing, since artificial intelligence's one success area is matching carefully compiled symptoms to specific diseases. It's very good at that. It has about four or five vertical Watsons in mind, different slices of industries that would be each vertical Watson is generally useful to a big set of big companies in those industries, and I think IBM sees its future there. Could there be a weather Watson? I don't know.
Well, you know, I just mentioned in the online text chat that I love the sound of the phrase vertical Watsons. It was interesting. Yesterday, I was flying. I flew from LaGuardia Airport back to Florida. And in the airport at LaGuardia, there was actually a very large advertisement for the weather company. And it, you know, made mention of all the various industries in which weather data is useful, if not necessary. So it does seem like IBM may well be taking this in a much more industrial direction. And for me, if I am an executive of another vertically oriented database and analysis firm, it makes me wonder whether I should expect IBM to come calling on me as well. Is this the sort of thing where we will see future acquisitions from IBM looking at, I don't know, agriculture, at transportation, at, as you've pointed out, the healthcare? You know, are there other verticals that IBM is going to buy the specific data set and data expertise in order to inform future versions of Watson? It's going to be interesting to see if that happens in 2016.
Yes, that's a good question. But I think it gets tricky for IBM pretty fast. They've stayed away from applications because the data set is worthless without an awful lot of domain expertise to put it to use. And there are already, you know, many domain experts and software companies making use of particular domain data. And for IBM to kind of move around cherry-picking weather data, this data, that data, and then applying its industry expertise or domain expertise, you could fail at that a number of times while losing a lot of money. It's just the sort of thing that the IBM culture, the IBM business model has shied away from. So I thought you mentioned a couple that were good candidates. Transportation, at any rate, I just can't see IBM doing this on a recurring fashion over and over again, constantly expanding the number of domains that it's trying to master. That would be Herculean.
True, and I at this point, I'm not sure IBM is quite desperate enough to try something like that, but I think it's something that we're going to be, in all likelihood, hearing more about in the coming year. You know, as we think about the various things, speaking of hearing about stuff in the coming year, we are well into the election cycle for the 2016 national elections here in the U.S. And earlier this year, lots and lots of ink was spilled on pages talking about an email server. And I thought that was an interesting set of discussions. Now, if you are a huge proponent of Hillary Clinton's candidacy, then you saw all of this as petty, mean-spirited, inconsequential hoo-ha over a private mail server where she didn't send any classified information.
It's the one thing I agree with Bernie Sanders on.
But it's one of those things that I do think it brings up an interesting question, because it's obvious that she is not the first holder of a cabinet level position to maintain her own server. And is that something that we should allow? Is it something where there really should be a firmer statement about that not being allowed, or at the very least a very rigid set of rules about how data, and I would say all data, off a server like that is archived by the U.S. Department of Archives? What do you think about that, Charlie?
Well, geez, there is a firm set of rules. I don't think there's a problem with that. There's a written policy that you don't do it. The problem is when people do it anyway and create these interminable hearings about the issue and keep revealing small details that are interesting in themselves but don't get us to a higher plane very quickly, do they? I think most certainly we should put an end to the practice. There's no question the home email server is a bad idea. People resort to it probably for the same reason that some people resort to shadow IT. And the government says don't do that, but then they don't quite allow you to get done some of the things you need to get done. But yes, make adequate email service available, archive the email in a rigid process, rigid foolproof, periodic snapshots of the data so that it can never be washed, retracted, lost. And make it into a foolproof process, make it secure. And on the latter front, I think the cyber snooping is more sophisticated than the government security, and I don't have a lot of confidence that rules protecting against the misuse of email actually protect the email. So somebody needs to keep working on that problem.
No question about that. And while the issue does seem to have settled down, at least in the process for the Democratic nomination, I have the strange feeling that once we know who the nominees are from the two respective parties, we may well hear about this all over again starting in the summer of 2016. I just have the odd feeling that we haven't heard the last of all this, although I'm not at all sure there's anything new to hear.
Yeah, and I don't hear people talking about it. I mean, if you remember Watergate, which some of us old-timers do, everybody's talking about what's been found, what's known now, who said what. You couldn't walk into a bar or a coffee house and not hear the background chatter occasionally. People just aren't talking about this. You know, they got to find something. And I don't know that anyone ever is going to, and people have already concluded that. So I don't think of it so much as playing. I think it's played itself out rather than as playing a role in the presidential campaign. But I don't know.
It's one of those things that makes me happy yet again that politics is not part of my beat. That's something that I don't miss at all. Well, Charlie, we're getting down to the last few minutes here in Information Week Live. So I want to switch speeds just a little bit and ask if there are any stories that you're looking forward to in 2016, anything that you either can already see as a story that's developing or something that maybe you hope becomes a story in 2016?
Oh, sure. The Internet of Things is a tremendously interesting topic because it opens so many potential doors. We're still pretty early into knowing what to do when we collect data off devices. I've heard a good prediction. We already collect machine data, device data, and a large percent of it, 75% of it, let's say, remains dark. Nobody knows what to do with it. Nobody knows what it means. It's been collected. It remains useless. And this speaker from IBM, he's considered the father of Watson. I've forgotten his name at the moment. He then predicted that by next year, we'll collect a lot more machine data, and 93% of it will be dark, which sounded like real progress to me. The mastering the Internet of Things, knowing how to collect, how to sort, and pull out the kind of data that we want, and then bring the analysis to it that tells us what it means, will be a really big thing next year. We'll realize how naive and inexperienced we are, and we'll try to overcome that. We'll think more in terms of cognitive computing, where you don't have a program look at a bunch of data and tell you what the analysis says. You fire off a bunch of compute engines designed to do different things. The analogy made that I liked was a honeybee has 100 million neurons. It can see, it can fly, it can mate. We build computers of billions and billions of neurons, and they still can't do any of these things. It matters what you're wired to do, what you do with those neurons, how they're plugged together, and what they can determine from the information given to them. And some very simple computers could detect not just temperature data on a machine, but what that data means, what the context is around the temperature rising. Is it a good sign? Is it a bad sign? Is it a danger sign? There could be all kinds of pattern recognition and both image and data patterns that would be meaningful if we could plug all this analysis together at once. That's kind of what we call cognitive computing, to get a context for the data, to suddenly realize, whoa, we're looking at something totally different. Our analysis system doesn't know what it means, but our cognitive computing engine is flashing danger, danger, danger. And we would then be in a much better position to deal with machine learning, the Internet of Things, and all these streams of data likely to be coming in 2016.
Well, Charlie, I am looking forward to you writing about all of those things. For me, I agree, IoT and is going to be huge. And one of the reasons, and this is something that I'm looking forward to writing about, so many people, when they think about Internet of Things, all they think about is the consumer side. And while the consumer side is going to be huge, I and another of our colleagues, Kelly Sheridan, will be at CES in a couple of weeks, bringing back all kinds of consumer-level stories. The industrial IoT is where I think the biggest impact is going to be, at least for the next few years. When we have electrical distribution systems that are more intelligent, when we have all kinds of manufacturing and warehousing, materials handling systems that have more sensing ability and more intelligence about what is detected, I think that's going to make a big difference in terms of costs of things. So it, for me, the industrial IoT is going to be much bigger, at least for the near term, and I'm looking forward to following some of those stories. I have to admit, I'm also looking forward to seeing what kind of new devices we see. You know, this year, in many ways, we saw the resurgence of the tablet. Now, I know that overall the numbers are down on tablet sales. At least the rate of growth has slowed dramatically. But I think for the first time we did have a business class tablet device in the Microsoft Surface that was a worthy competitor to the Apple iPad. And so in having two players, it really does bring about a lot more possibility, especially because everything I hear when I go to large enterprise software conventions and meetings is that enterprise customers want software available on the tablets. They want things that employees can easily carry around and use to access data no matter wherever they are or whenever they need it. And tablets are very handy for that. So I think devices are going to continue to be big. And then there's some stuff that's just going to surprise us. What's not going to surprise us? My fearless guarantee today is that sometime in 2016, we will have another jaw-dropping data breach where some major holder of data announces that someone has gotten in and accessed all of it, and we're left going, how could this happen for the approximately 479th time? We will also, I think, have a lot more stories about how people are using computers to make people's lives better. It's no accident that we see a lot of stories coming out of the vendors about how their computer systems are used in things like cancer research. For all of the emphasis that our industry places on sheer technical advance on the one side and the gobs of money that come in on the other. The fact is that many people, if not most, in the industry really want to feel like what they do is making a difference for individuals in society and is somehow still involved in making the world better. And I am gratified by the extent to which that drives so much of the industry. So, and I'm hopeful enough to think that in 2016 we'll get to see at least another couple of stories that say that that some of that work is paying off.
Yes, those are good points. Hopefully we'll see the headline, Cancer Cured. Sounds unlikely, but we've never before had the means to generate a lot of individual genome data, and we can begin to relate specific individual cancer experiences to the person's genome and look at other people with highly similar genomes and see what worked there, and you begin to get a collective knowledge that is much better than anything we have seen so far, and we may get a genetic basis with which to fight cancer. So we'll keep looking for that headline.
Well, Charlie, I think we've come to the end of our time here with this final episode of Information Week Live for 2015. We will continue here at Information Week to have stories up throughout the end of the year holidays. Then we will be launching into 2016 with an awful lot of new and interesting stuff. Charlie, can you tell everyone where to follow you on the social media so that they can keep up with the stories that you write for Information Week every day?
Sure. I'm at Babcock CW on Twitter and, of course, at informationweek.com.
Well, thank you so much. And for our listeners, if you do not follow Charlie on Twitter, you really need to. If you are in the cloud space, Charlie does an absolutely outstanding job of keeping up with what's important and telling you why. So let me encourage all of you to go out to Twitter, find Babcock CW, follow him, and then be sure to make his pieces at Information Week a regular part of your information diet here in the IT world. As for me, you can follow me on Twitter and Periscope at KG4GWA. I'm also available on LinkedIn, Curtis Franklin. Facebook, the same way. You're welcome to follow me either place. Please let us know what you think the biggest stories have been and what you think the big stories of 2016 are going to be. We would love to hear from you. We do, as I said, have a lot of great stuff coming up in the coming year. Radio is going to be becoming more and more important as a way of getting stories to you. So please check back with us in 2016. Lots more great stuff coming up. Well, for Charlie Babcock and everyone here at Information Week Live, I'm Kurt Franklin. Thanks for being with us. May your 2016 be twice as good as 2015 has been for you. We'll look forward to seeing you back here next year.